Hey, listeners, thanks for being here today. Another episode is coming to you with special guest Michael Roderick. Today, you're going to hear all about how he went from being an English teacher to Broadway producer to now running his very own business, helping entrepreneurs stand out, get noticed in the best possible way. As you listen to Michael's story, you will hear a common thread of connection and doing the things that he's really good at. When you notice what you're good at, you can apply that to all different kinds of passions in your life. So here's to living big. Enjoy this episode with Michael, and we'll see you on the other side. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Dialed In. I'm here with Michael. You just heard all of his interesting background information, and I'm so excited to share him with you today. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So I'm going to ask you what I ask many of my guests, and I see you out there living a big life, and I'd love for you to share a part of your story, and you can start wherever you'd like.
Sure. So the part that always kind of is the most fun for me is when I actually decided to leave teaching. I was a high school English teacher for about 8 years, and there was this moment where I was sitting on the subway and I was reading Seth Godin's book Lynchpin. And in the book, he has this really, really fantastic section where he talks about the fact that school was originally built for the purpose of us to be factory workers. Like we needed to sit in yes. rows. We needed to sort of keep our heads down, do our work. And I was reading that and I had this moment where I said, wow, I'm a factory worker. Like ultimately, like I take these kids through to a standardized test, and the only thing I'm ever evaluated on is whether or not they get past that standardized test. And every single day I'm really just graded on whether or not these kids pass a big test at the end of the year.
Wow.
It didn't matter all the other stuff I did. I ran the drama program. I did all of these things for my students. I had all the, you know, and I loved teaching, mm-hmm. but I realized that I wasn't necessarily going to be seen as anything more than a factory worker. Mm. And I had this moment where I basically said, you know what? I have a talent for teaching. I am very, very good at taking these complex ideas and boiling them down and getting folks to understand it. So, you know what? I'm gonna step away from this career. And it was a very steady career. Like, you cannot get a more steady role in many cases than a teacher, because it's right. hard. Unless you do something that gets you like in a movie of the week, like it's hard to get fired as a teacher. Like it's, you know, like every once in a while you might get let go because of downsizing or something like that, but it's not very easy, you know, to end up being let go as a teacher. So I was leaving something that was very, very steady, mm-hmm. very, very easy. And I was going into a profession. I was going into Broadway producing.
Wow.
Exactly. And, you know, and the thing that a lot of people don't understand about Broadway is that you can't make a living. That they say, like, you can't make a living, but you make a killing. And that really is the truth. Because in Broadway, what you do is you raise money to put up a show. And if the show makes the money back for those investors and the show is a hit, then yes, at some point down the line, you're going to make some money once your investors are completely made whole. But most of the time, the investors don't make back their money. Most of the time, you don't make anything. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of in this world of raising money, getting people to write $25,000, $200,000 checks, like big, big money. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't going to see any of it unless there was a return on investment that happened mm-hmm. from the show. So I had to basically go into like entrepreneur mode and be like, okay, well, how do I make a living? right? And a lot of people think that you can just make a living as a Broadway producer, but unless you're a lead producer, that's not the case. There's so many misconceptions out there about what it means to be a producer and, you know, what you actually do and sort of how it works. But as I said, I had this teaching background. I knew how to teach things. Mm-hmm. So what I realized was that a lot of people would be very curious as to how I went from being a high school English teacher to a Broadway producer. So I started teaching workshops where I would host these experiences and have people act out things like one-on-one meetings, job interviews, and cocktail parties, and then teach them the principles behind building those relationships and leveraging those relationships to have bigger opportunities in their lives.
So, wow, there's 100 questions I could ask from that story. Why Broadway? Like that just, mm-hmm. Where's that connection? Well, okay, you said you led the drama club or the drama yeah. program at school. So obviously you had some type of passion for that, right? Is that why yes. you went that direction?
Yeah, well, I had a theater background. I had always had a theater background. Okay. So I was in shows when I was in school. I directed shows. I wrote shows. I was a published playwright. Like I'd done a bunch of stuff. And when I got to the city, I'm originally from Rhode Island, which, you know, is a very, very small place and, you know, mm-hmm. everybody knows everybody. So when I moved to the city, I didn't really know anybody. I was teaching, I was living with a friend who was the campus minister at the school that I was teaching at. It was an all boys Catholic high school on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And I basically started to explore, well, what is theater like in New York? So I started doing things on the small scale there. So I started doing like little shows in like little theaters sort of all around the city. Mm-hmm. But eventually what I learned was that basically there was an upper echelon, right? And I think like in every industry, that's what you learn. Like you start at, you know, the early stages of doing all the, you know, kind of simple things. And you realize, oh, there's something bigger. Right? Mm-hmm. There's a whole other kind of world. So what I learned was that the top of the pile was Broadway. If you wanted to be in the theater world, the top of the pile was Broadway. That was where you wanted to be. And so what I did was I've always been a very curious person. So I basically said, okay, how does it work? So rather than being like, okay, I'm going to try to be the best and have somebody discover me and get me to Broadway, mm-hmm. which is the direction that most people in entertainment go, and actually most people in entrepreneurship go, right? Which is this, I call it the myth of discovery, where we believe that if we just do good enough work, somebody's just going to randomly find us and choose
like
us.
Magic?
Exactly. And so, yeah, like, just, you know, promote us or, you know, whatever the scenario is.
Sure.
And I realized that I was the architect of my own discovery, right? So like, I basically was like, I need to figure out how this industry works. And what I learned was that Broadway was really just about raising money. If you raised enough money, you could get a credit and you could be a Broadway producer. So when I learned that, I realized that there was a vulnerability in that equation. And that vulnerability was that most other people who wanted to be producers really wanted credit. They wanted their name on the property. Sure. They wanted to have their name above the title. They wanted to have their name associated, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
So what I realized was that if I didn't ask for credit, if I actually just said, I want to get better at raising money, which is what I wanted to do. I just wanted to learn how to get better at raising money, mm-hmm. that basically every producer I talked to would give me deal flow. And basically be like, yeah, here's my paperwork. Yeah, you're going to go find investors and I don't have to give you credit. Yeah, go to town. So I ended up with a portfolio of shows. So when I would go to somebody to talk to them about investing, if they didn't like that show, I actually had 5 or 6 others for them to mm-hmm. look at. So I was wow. able to raise money significantly faster. And what happened was people saw that. And when you prove your credibility to people, like when they see that you've done something, mm-hmm. right? Word gets around. So in a very, very short period of time, I was sitting down for breakfast with another producer who said, listen, I know that you've raised money in the past. I've seen that you can do this. I want to offer you credit on this next show. Mm-hmm. You want to come on board and come on the team and raise money with us.
What a story.
Thanks.
Wow. So how long did you do that?
So I was in the Broadway world probably for, let's say, probably for about 5 or 6 years. Cause mm-hmm. it was like, I want to say I started moving into more sort of straight entrepreneurship stuff. I actually took a detour probably, I think it was around like 2013. I worked in an educational technology startup. I was approached by the founder of the startup and jumped into first an operations role and then a director of business development role mm-hmm. With that particular company. But probably about, like I said, probably about like 5 or 6 years, I was either raising money for shows or helping put shows together or helping put people together. Mm-hmm. Connecting investors to each other, connecting other producers to each other, things of that nature. And I was always still, like I said, you know, I had to make a living, right? So mm-hmm. I was always still coming up with like, well, what could I teach? And everybody wanted to know how I was getting in the rooms I was getting into. So I was getting my master's at the time in educational theater from mm-hmm. NYU. And one of the things that they talk about is simulation. And how if like you act out a scenario, a lot of the time you're going to do the exact same thing that you would do in real life. Mm-hmm. So when I would do these workshops and I have people act out these networking scenarios, it basically gave me a bird's eye view of like how people interact and why we say yes to things and why we say no to things. Mm-hmm. So I looked at the patterns of that. And the thing that's really interesting is like, if you see patterns, you can always develop frameworks from those patterns. So you basically look at the patterns in the work that you do, and those are the precursors to the frameworks that you create. Like you can teach things once you understand those patterns.
Yes.
So I started doing that, and I became really well known in this relationship building space, not only because I was able to get people to invest in Broadway shows, but because I was able to get you know, individuals to want to have a conversation with me if I had never met them before, and you know, all these different types of things.
Wow. So then doing that led you to what was next?
Oh, yeah. So when I was so I was working in the educational technology startup, I was in this business development position, and they sent me to a really bad conference. And I had this experience where basically I got to this conference, and because I was in a sales position, I was a pariah. Like the conference was focused on teachers of mathematics, right? So anybody who sort of fit into a sales position, like they would look at your, you know, business tag and then mm-hmm. they basically ignore you, right? And they wouldn't pay attention to you. And so I had this experience of, wow, like I'm at this massive conference and I'm just being treated very, very poorly. And everybody is, you know, focused on, you know, themselves. There's like these pods together, all these different types of things. And I just kind of said, you know, I feel like this conference model is very, very broken. And I got back and I was working at that startup. And basically what happened was there was a period where we're selling to schools, and it was a particular week where like everything was just sort of dead. So like none of the people were returning my call, like nothing was happening. So I just took a little bit of time to sketch out this idea where I said, well, you know, I'm really curious. Like I love connecting. I love connecting people. I love other connectors. What would happen if I got connectors together to talk about what is best practice? Has anybody ever done that? And what I realized was nobody had. So I started this event called ConnectorCon, where I brought all these different connectors together. And over the course of, I think it was about 35 days, I programmed it, sold it, and launched it. The very first ConnectorCon. And basically the premise was, you filled out an application to go, and on the application, it said what you needed help with, like what you could use support in. Mm-hmm. And when you got there, you got a booklet that told you who was there, and told you what they needed, but didn't tell you their job titles. So there were no name tags. There was none of that game of like, I'm looking at you and I'm looking at your name tag and I'm deciding whether or not you're valuable to me, mm-hmm. you know, all those different types of things. So people could actually just connect and sort of help each other. Mm-hmm. And I made it a requirement that anybody who presented or anybody who was part of the educational portion of things also had to participate in the conference itself. So that there wasn't the divide of like, mm-hmm. hey, I just spoke and now I'm out the door. Like you were actually sitting next to the person who just spoke on stage. So
that's
like,
brilliant.
Thank you. It yeah. leveled the playing field.
Absolutely.
And at the end of that conference, I taught some of these methodologies during the conference and I sort of shared some of these ideas of creating safe space and connecting and you know, elements like that. And at the end of that conference, I had a number of people come up to me and say, you need to keep doing this work. So again, I left, a startup technology job. Incidentally, like a couple of months before the company was even before the company was acquired. So good move, me.
Right.
But in all seriousness, I realized like there was no way that I was going to be satisfied or happy just trying to sell software. Like that mm-hmm. was just never going to be, like I wasn't passionate about it. I wasn't excited about it. And everything that I was passionate about while I was working in that position was all the meetings that I would have and the conversations that I would have and the people that I could connect together mm-hmm. and, you know, that side of things. So I left another super steady, straightforward thing to basically jump into the event business, really. And I ran that conference for a number of years. And the conference was basically, it didn't really make a ton of money because events don't really make money. They're more of a marketing tool. They bring people sort of into the fold. So that was a tool to bring people into other programs that I had created and other systems and processes and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I like it. You know, there's a theme I see here, like unfolding through all your things. So maybe I won't say that yet until you tell me
what came next.
Brought you to. Right. Continue.
Yeah. So basically, I start doing this entrepreneurship stuff, right? I'm running, I've been running these events and I've been doing, all of these, I've been doing all these programs and projects and coaching and consulting and all of this other stuff. And I eventually sort of hit this point where I was kind of known very, very well in the networking world. Like everybody started to, like I was quoted in books. I'm still quoted in books. People still ask me, like I still get questions about networking and sort of relationship building and in podcasts all the time. And people mm-hmm. want to know, sort of that world. I even had I have a podcast that I now am the main host of. But I was a co-host for a long time called Access to Anyone. And the theme of that show was me sharing all these relationship building methodologies and sort mm-hmm. of, helping other people. But what happened was probably about 3 or 4 years back, there was this, sort of period where a lot of the networking advice and a lot of the people who were coming out with anything in the relationship building space were really just kind of presenting it as, if you meet famous people, then you'll be rich. And it was very much like, it reminded me of the South Park episode with the underpants gnomes, where basically they're like, step one, collect underpants. Step two, and then they stare blankly at the screen. And then they say, step three, profit. Right? and it's very, very much like that kind of, mm-hmm. There was a lot of that teaching. So I basically said, okay, what is the reason why I ended up in all of the rooms that I ended up in if networking wasn't the answer, right? Mm-hmm. And I realized that I could teach anyone how to get in the door, but it didn't matter if people wouldn't let them stay in the room. So I realized that the thing that was always, that I was always still coaching on, that I was always still doing in all of this relationship building stuff, but I had never actually put my finger on it, was packaging. So anytime I was introducing people, I was coming up with what is the most compelling way to introduce this person so that the other person is so hungry to have the meeting. Mm-hmm. You know, so I would always think about like, well, what are the factors? Like, what are the ways that I can position this person so that even if this other person is at a significantly higher level, they're super hungry and they want to meet that person. So I realized, oh, when you package things properly, when you package them in a good way, in a way that causes people to refer them, then you're much more likely to have more people coming your way, more success, more opportunities, all these different types of things. So I decided, okay, I'm going to test this. And I was teaching one of my networking workshops and I took 15 minutes. Now, 2-day workshop, mind you, 15 minutes to say, hey guys, there's this thing and I don't know if it really matters. I don't know if it's going to be interesting to you, but I want to take about 15 minutes to talk about this theory I have. And I have this theory that if you create what I call a referable brand, if you come up with something that other people just keep talking about and it refers back to you, I have a feeling that it just makes you the type of person that everybody wants to know. And I kind of laid out some examples of my own experiences and my own, you know, instances of having people share concepts of mine or share ideas of mine. And at the end of that workshop, I offered everybody a hot seat and every single person wanted their hot seat. 2-day workshop, mind you, 15 minutes, everybody wanted their hot seat to be on referable brand.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the shift. And I said, you know what? I want thoughtful givers to become thought leaders. I want people who are really, really great at giving and helping and supporting others to know that they have the ability to package their ideas in such a way that other people will share them and other people will want to support them and move their projects forward. Because many, many times the subpar expert or the subpar content ends up having extraordinary marketing, and the extraordinary expert and the extraordinary content ends up having the subpar marketing. And the packaging is what gets that to happen. So if you can start to build that in to somebody who really has amazing content and really has amazing material, and you can help them create a way to say it, then you can really create a much, much bigger ripple effect. You can bring real thought leaders into the mix. Mm-hmm. People who really are researched, who have always sort of spent all their time in the lab, mm-hmm. and you help them sort of be out on the stage.
Yeah, it makes total sense. It's very interesting as I look at the threads of your story that really it's all about connection. Mm-hmm. You know, it's either building relationships, fixing relationships, helping them be better. And then, so now currently, what's your company called? Like, what's the name of?
So it's still called Small Pond Enterprises. It was okay. always Small Pond Enterprises, but the concept is to show you how to be a big fish in a small pond, right?
Yeah.
And the fact of the matter is you can create a small pond around your idea. Mm-hmm. So you become the big fish. Like a lot of the time what happens is we sort of try to go out there and say like, look at me or pay attention to me. Here's my concept, as opposed to saying, how am I going to package this thing so that it's actually bigger than me? Mm-hmm. And that everybody says, well, who came up with that? Where did that come from? Right? Because that's what refers back to you. And that's where all the opportunity starts to show up. When mm-hmm. people are sharing your ideas, those ideas live on. They live on when you're not in the room. Mm-hmm. They live on in conversations. They live on in conferences. They live on after somebody's listened to a podcast, right? When you're able to do that, you really do start to become the person everybody's referring to. And that makes you the big fish because you have this small pond of people who are following you and paying attention to you. And no matter how large it grows, you're still a section of a much, much bigger ocean, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love how, as I'm listening to you, I mean, obviously you're growth minded, you know, part of a key piece of your initial story was reading a personal development, personal growth book, right? Seth Godin. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
And you just continue to evolve. So besides investing in yourself, whether it be reading a book or whatever that you do to grow, what else do you think that you have done consistently to be able to have the evolution of your big life? Like, it looks like 8 different ways here. I mean, just sure. In this conversation, right? So what else have you done?
Yeah. So one of the biggest things is that I've always made it a point to diversify the community that I have around me. So I have always made it a point to say that I'm not going to just limit something to one particular industry. One of the mm-hmm. things that I did with ConnectorCon that I think was a big factor in its success was that I only accepted a certain number of people in each industry, and I only accepted a certain number of people at a certain level in those industries. So it wasn't a room full of beginners, and it wasn't a room full of intermediates, and it wasn't a room full of pros. Mm-hmm. It was a mix of all of those. It wasn't just entertainment people. It was tech people, and it was health and wellness people. So, and the thing is, there's that concept of the law of weak ties, which a lot of people have sort of talked about and shared, which is this idea that your strongest results often come from your weakest connections, because those connections have access to completely different industries and completely different worlds.
Right.
So when you actually bring a room together of weak ties, what you do is you increase your opportunity exponentially. And that's the thing that most of us don't necessarily think about. Mm-hmm. We think about, how can I increase my opportunity one-to-one? We think about, how can I meet this person and they can help me get to, you know, this particular thing? But we don't think about, how can I bring together as many diverse minds as possible and have them not only help me with the things that I'm trying to achieve, but help each other? Mm-hmm. And how do I be the center of that conversation? And that's where so much of the opportunity comes from. When mm-hmm. you are the one who takes the time to bring people together and thread them together. I've referred to it in the past as web spinning, right? Like, most people sort of consider sure. the idea of success as climbing a ladder. And I don't believe that. I believe you are spinning a web. What you're doing is you are threading these pieces back and forth and back and forth mm-hmm. and back and forth and threading these people back and forth. And you are in the center. So you're actually experiencing all of it. You're supporting all of it. You're connected to all of it. And that's where so many opportunities come from, because that diverse group is going to create so many interesting new perspectives, new ways of looking at things, innovations that you had never thought about before.
I like it. I would imagine you've had to spend a fair amount of time in like observational thinking and reflecting in yep. order to tweeze out. I mean, I listen to you and you're able to look back and tweeze out the things that were the most pertinent to what you needed at the time.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And you know, what's very, very interesting is that in the business world, we spend a very large amount of time on planning, and we spend a very large amount of time on execution. But when we get to the topic of reflection, all we kind of have are journals for the most part. Mm-hmm. Like, that's usually the only way that kind of people, right. talk about or sort of think about reflection.
Right.
But reflection is the most powerful tool that you have as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And particularly reflection after the bad experience, right? Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. most of the time when we have a bad experience, the thought is, I want to move away from that, right? Like, I want to get away from that bad experience. I don't want to think about it anymore. Mm-hmm. But in that wreckage are the seeds of success. Like, there is so much that you're able to discover where you're like, oh, wow, this is how people interact. These are the mistakes that, you know, a lot of folks will make. So let me come up with ways to reframe that. Let me come up with ways to rethink this. And let me come up with ways to look at my next venture, my next project, and ask, okay, in the past I had this experience. So what can I adjust now so mm-hmm. that experience is not the same?
Mm-hmm. This is so good. Yes. So it's interesting. In the work that I do in leadership and mindset coaching, right, I have a framework that I teach where you look back at any time in your life where either you navigated a really stressful situation really well or you dealt with change in a way where you came out on top. And I always do the successful part first because, well, it helps with your growth, right? It helps bolster your idea that, okay, you can do this. I can move forward. And I ask them to tweeze out the things they had to believe, the ways they had to act, what they had to do, the action they had to take in order to navigate that well. And then of course, I ask the reverse too. Now think mm-hmm. about a time you failed and look at, you know, what you can tweeze out of that. But then you have your own learning model for success. It's right there. And once you can grab onto that, you can apply that to any area, you know, and you know what works. Oh, okay. Remember, I can do this. I navigated this. I can handle that. And I even did it with my he's turned 14 yesterday, my son. Like, he navigated a situation where we were home and my husband was really sick and I had to call 911, and he navigated that with flying colors, but yet had a complete meltdown on our pontoon boat because he got bit by a deer fly. And I'm like, okay, now, like, you handled this really well. And what did you have to do that? Like, you can next time you can handle the deer fly because you can, you know, like, but we forget, like, you get put in different kinds of situations and you forget that you can handle things. You can move past the fear or the pain or the discomfort of failing, right? Yeah. Or of growing in hard ways. So it's, you know, same different application, but same. I mean,
I refer to it as the tennis novice versus the tennis pro, right? So the tennis novice misses a shot, and in many cases, the game is over, right? Because they're now inside of their own head. They're really worried about the shot. They need to make sure that they get the, you know, they win, et cetera.
Yes.
The tennis pro misses a shot and says, where did that shot come from? Where was I standing? They're constantly kind of looking at it. And even if they lose the game, they're like, what information do I have so that the next game I'm thinking about this and I'm sort of thinking about this particular process.
Right.
And it's the aspect of the tennis novice is what I would refer to as a slave to the product. Right? It's the outcome that they're most obsessed about, the thing that they care the most about. The tennis pro is a student of the process.
Yes.
They never look at it as like, I'm stuck in like what the outcome is going to be. They look at it as like, whatever this failure is, whatever this problem is, whatever this thing has come through, it's new information. And I always look at it that way. Like, nothing, like, there is no failure. There's just new information. Like, when something falls apart, it's like now you have new information about that particular thing. Right. And in the moment, we may have those moments, and we all do, where we're like, wow, that was a failure. That didn't go the way that I wanted it to go. And we may be upset about it. But the fact of the matter is that thing is gifting us so much important information about what we need to do next, right?
Right. So you're talking about like growth mindset, right? Versus a fixed mindset. I mean, essentially, it's all that. It's not having destination addiction. It's knowing that the journey, you're going to learn and become more from the journey if you choose to, than you ever get from the destination, because as soon as you arrive, your next destination appears, right?
Yep.
Like, you never arrive if you're really invested in your growth and where you're going. And I love that. I never heard of it in terms of tennis, but what a great example. That makes total sense. Wow. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So I pulled out 4 different teaching points from this. So I'm going to run through those now, and then I'm going to we'll share with listeners how they can connect with you, okay?
Sure.
All right. So number one, your strengths and giftedness can be used in a variety of ways. I mean, we watched you use your giftedness, you know, as a teacher, Broadway producer, conference producer, and now in, you know, what you're doing with brand building, referable brand building. So, you know, I think sometimes it's easy for us to fall into the trap of find your passion and do that. Like it's just one thing, but it could be 100 things. And as you evolve and change, you know, it can look different, and that's okay. Which leads to number two, growth is an evolution. Because yes. When you're growing, you don't stay the same. And so you, as you evolve, what you want changes. Number three, connection and diversity in who you surround yourself with matters. And I always talk about who you surround yourself with, like that you become who you surround yourself with, right? But your opportunities also lie in who you surround yourself with. And then number four, reflecting, taking time to reflect, to learn from both the good and the bad experiences in your life. You know, if our experience alone was the best teacher, we would all be growing and evolving, but it's not. It's reflected experience, right?
Exactly.
Experience we reflect on and choose to grow from. So all that growth is a choice. And I think, boy, your journey is just a prime example of what it is to live big. Like you just have taken step after step, lean into who you are. And I love it. I love how you are really using your gifts and talents to serve people well. And in a way that I know listeners, you can't see Michael because obviously this is a podcast where you're just hearing voice, but he lights up when he's talking about what he does. He lit up when he was talking about the 15 minutes that he spent talking about this theory that turned into this thing. And it's fun to see. I believe we should all have that. We should all be lit up about the thing that is driving us, you know, each and every day. We should all be excited to get out of bed and wonder, you know, what we're going to be handed today. What gifts will we get today? And I just appreciate your time today, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. This was an absolute blast.
Of course. So how can people connect with you? What's the best way they can connect with you?
Sure, sure. So the website is smallpondenterprises.com. And I'll also get you a link to, I have a thing called the referability rater where you can actually do a test, to see sort of cool. Like how referable are your ideas, and your concepts. I'm on social, so, you know, you can always feel free to connect me on LinkedIn or, the Book of Faces or, you know, any of those places.
The Book of Faces.
And always feel free to just like reach out, say hello. I'm always happy to be helpful.
Perfect. Well, thank you again for spending time with us today. And listeners, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I know you have choices on what you can do with your time each and every day. And the fact that you're here with us means a lot. So until next time, take action, live big, and stay dialed in. Thanks for being with us today on Dialed In. In this episode, I know you were inspired to dig into really what makes you different, what makes you amazing, and what gifts you have that you can serve others with. If you're thinking that you want to grow your awareness in this area, I have a resource for you, something that I do with my one-on-one coaching clients and in my group coaching programs. It's called the Lens Method. And you can use this method to really grow your awareness and lean into being the person that you want to be, using your gifts, using your talents in ways that only you can. Get the guide and the method at bigliferesources.com/lens, L-E-N-S. Again, that's bigliferesources.com/lens. Thanks for being here, and we'll see you next time.